Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. Last week, Daniel Whithouse was in the relatively civilised surrounds of Sydney, but he was heading off for Newcastle. And I was wondering openly last week whether that might not be quite such a safe place to be as Sydney, but we'll find out because Daniel joins us on the line now. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Doug.
So how was Newcastle?
Newcastle was a bit of a challenge because I seemed to pick the week when everybody was out of town or busy or who had family medical emergencies, so I didn't get to talk to as many people as I wanted to, and it just kind of illustrates that I'm only in every place, you know, for 1 week. But the people that I did talk to had some pretty good things to say about Newcastle, obviously with a few exceptions to that.
Well, at least you managed to get through all the difficulties, and you seem to have come out okay on the other side, and you met some worthwhile people.
Absolutely. I met some people from obviously some of the local organisations and also some people who have been involved in some of the community events over the years. And you know, I'm told that Newcastle has a history of about, you know, at least 25 years of where they've had kind of, you know, strong social groups meeting and kind of, you know, supporting one another for at least, you know, since the mid-1980s, which is quite exciting.
I got the impression, though, that it's like some of the other places you've visited. People are a bit nostalgic and saying, well, it used to be better. Well, we used to have more things. It's declined somewhat.
Yeah, I think that's just a function of age with lots of us. But also, like, I did get the feeling, and what I suspect has happened is that Newcastle has changed. Like I had someone say to me, look, it's still working class. Like there have been so many things that have changed, but it's still kind of, you know, working class. And I feel like there's you know, as happens in the second biggest city in most of the states and territories that I've visited, you kind of have this splitting of the community where kind of half want to stay around and kind of, you know, enjoy life in their place, whereas the other half just kind of want to get out or travel to Sydney or wherever else each weekend. Mm-hmm. And what happens then is that you've got a splitting of this community that could be doing something in town, whereas I think what they were saying was 25 years ago, people chose to stay and socialise and kind of gather in Newcastle and they didn't have as many options to get out. So that was one of the reasons, but also I think that you know, in some ways Newcastle has relaxed in a lot of ways around LGBT issues.
Yeah, but there was, I mean, you know, the story of Simon that you tell on thatsogay.com.au, I found that fairly horrifying. I mean, it's great that he came through it, but what a terrible time that boy had.
Oh, look, this is a, you know, a relatively recent story of a young man who was going to school on the Central Coast. And, you know, I've been even talking to people here, you know, like I've just moved to Bathurst and, you know, I've been talking to people and they're saying, well, you know, the Central Coast has got everything, the Central Coast has got this, no one cares. But this is a perfect example of a young man who had support, you know, for being gay from his family and from some teachers, but he was getting a horrific time at school and really had no option to leave in the end because, you know, even though he had all of these kind of attributes that in any other kind of town in Australia I've heard young people thrive, he just was just copying it day in, day out.
Yeah, and this was not just your verbal bullying or whatever else. He was being beaten up. He was being thrown down staircases. He was, and the staff were joining in to some extent, certainly verbally.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there was one story of where he went into a class and that, you know, they basically said, you know, Simon Smith, get out of this classroom right now. And he'd say, well, why is that? And the teacher would say, because I don't want, you know, a faggot like you in my classroom. You know, now what options do you have if you're a student at that stage? And he just said that there was, you know, with comments like that and attitudes like that from the teachers, and, you know, and then I guess the fact that he had, you know, all of this physical bullying, he had no choice but to, you know, either snap or leave school. And he managed to do that, but only after, I guess, things escalated for him.
And there wasn't very much support from the head of the school either.
Yeah, I think the head of the school was like many principals, and just...
Trying to turn a blind eye to it, almost.
Absolutely. Simon's mother encouraged him to go up to the school and take a letter and say, look, we're sick of the violence, we're sick of you not, you know, sitting, we're sick of you sitting on your hands, and we want something done about this. You know, we want our son protected and able to stay at school because he's rather bright. And the principal just said, look, we really don't have a problem. You know, we don't really know what you're talking about. And then Simon actually knew that two of the teachers who were supporting him actually put in official complaints about the violence. And he said, look, two teachers, I'm not making this up, two teachers have put in official complaints, that's fairly serious, I want something done about this. And only then did the principal kind of, you know, get involved and say, look, there must be something we can do to kind of exit you quietly from the school.
That's not really a lot of help, is it? I mean, that's just passing the problem on to somebody else.
Absolutely, it's passing on the problem. But you know, at that stage, I think what Simon was saying is that he just wanted to get out. When he realised that that was the attitude of the principal, he just knew that he had to get out, and the principal finally relented. But, you know, only after, you know, a 15, 16-year-old boy, you know, had to, you know, talk him through that. And that's you know, a ridiculous state of affairs that he had to be explaining and advocating on behalf of himself.
Indeed. I love the part, though, where he actually gathered a squad of girlfriends around him for protection. I think that's brilliant. Where his girlfriends all sort of formed an honour guard almost to keep an eye on him and make sure he didn't get into too much trouble.
And it's amazing how many stories of this we find that you know, girls are, you know, incredibly protective of you know, young gay boys in schools, and certainly that was his experience. And he said he only had the option of having lots of girlfriends around him to protect him so that he literally would not get bashed and kicked. And there were certainly stories of him, you know, taking himself to the doctor or his mum taking him to the hospital. And then he would also go to the art room and the staff room, and that was only where he could be with staff who were supportive, and that was if they were there and if they had the time. So his options seemed to narrow for him to the point where he said, I have to get out. And one of the things he was saying is that, you know, he could have gone to another school, but the Central Coast is, you know, is such that people would know that a gay guy had been moved to another school, and he just felt that he was going to be a target wherever he left because the Central Coast was small enough.
And he wouldn't have his girl squad.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, you know, that for him wasn't an option. So, this is only a recent story, and for all the great stories that I did actually hear about our students and supportive schools in the Newcastle region, that was one of them that you know, was not the case.
Yeah, I've heard similar stories here in Melbourne relatively recently as well, only a couple of years ago. I was interviewing some people at Eltham High School, and there was, I talked to one mother there. Her son had been relentlessly bullied at the other school he was at before he went to Eltham High, to the point where he'd ceased speaking to anyone and he never lifted his eyes above the ground.
Yes.
Within about 6 months of being at Eltham High, he'd actually started to come out of himself again. And as she said, he'll probably never be completely right again, but at least we've managed to rescue most of him. And that was only a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and talking to teachers who kind of go, you know, it's just a little bit of banter and it's a bit of bullying and we all go through it and it's just, you know, it's just words or it's just, you know, a couple of, you know, rough-ups. You can actually see in very real terms about how that impacts on someone's life and most likely for the rest of their life. And again, this is something that has impacted on Simon's life to the point where, you know, he was expected to go through and get stunning marks and he wanted to be a doctor. And, you know, he just said, I had that taken away from me, and I had to basically do a lot of work to get to the point where I actually returned to university to study and get myself prepared, because I decided that what had happened to me at high school was not going to affect me for the rest of my life. I wasn't going to let it. But, you know, again, that's something he had to go through, that process himself. He had to kind of go through that, and it's kind of like he's taken the responsibility for everything that's happened. And, you know, like it's just stories like that that, you know, wake me up in the morning and get me ready to go.
Yes.
Yeah, but also just, you know, like, hearten me that, you know, what do you do in that situation? And yeah, I just take my hat off to Simon and so many other young men and women like him.
Yep. Well, thanks very much for that, Daniel. Where are you off to next?
I'm off to Bathurst and also to Orange, and I've got 520 students to speak to during an intermission of rent. So that will be interesting. Let
interesting.
Me tell you.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll talk
yes.
to you about that next week.
And in the meantime, of course, we're going to have an election.
And I'm hopefully going to be in the telly room on Saturday night. So I'm gonna go and because Canberra is next week for me. So I can't wait.
Well, if you are, give us a call because I shall be here at Joy and I'll be on air from 7 o'clock till 11 o'clock.
So I've got my phone and I'm more than happy to be on the blower.
All right, we'll talk to you on Saturday night then. Thanks, Daniel.
Take care, Doug. Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.